Welcome back to Don't Look Under the Bed. And for those of you joining us for the first time, welcome in. We hope that you will subscribe, share, and review the show. Mandy Graziano is a ball of irresistible enthusiasm and radiates good vibes wherever she is. She's an author of the book Sales Tales. She's a sales coach. She co-hosts the podcast Adventures in Business. And she's a conference consultant with HPN Global. We talk about all of the things this week on Don't Look Under the Bed. Welcome back to Don't Look Under the Bed. I'm Robin.
And I'm Nikki.
And our guest today is Mandy Graziano. Welcome to Don't Look Under the Bed. Woo!
Hey, everybody. Good to see or hear you, see you, engage with you.
Yay.
Yes. Well, welcome to the show.
We are so happy to have you with us, Mandy. There's so much to talk about. I mean, you are an author. You're a sales coach, you're a podcast host, you're a conference consultant. Is there anything that I missed?
All the things. I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, a sister, an aunt, a dog mama, all the things.
All of the things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, football season starting. I am a hopeless Cleveland Browns fan.
Okay. Really?
Hopelessly optimistic. Yes.
Okay. Good. So who's up there now? Did our guy from Houston Texans go up there?
Deshaun Watson.
Yes. So okay.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So yeah, football season. So starts in 2 weeks. Whoop whoop.
Starts.
So we're ready. Regular season, right?
Regular season. Yeah.
Wow.
Very cool.
My heart's getting ready to be broken.
Listen, we live in Houston, and so our team has been 22, 23 years, and you know, it's been a constant struggle for us. So
they may ask you to play.
I'm
ready to do it.
We got some jerseys in the back. Come on, put one on.
Oh my goodness. But I'm too a football fan, so I'm excited to watch. I watch everybody, so I just enjoy the game overall.
I love that. Me too. Your Texans are fun to watch though, sometimes, I think.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
Not so much on like a Sunday or a Monday night when the world is watching. Not on those nights, but just when we're sitting here and we're just watching like a regional game when it's just only televised in certain area, you know, but not so much on a national stage. We don't do so well. But we're going to send them some good juju.
Be hopeful. Exactly. You never know.
Yes.
You never know.
We're going to be hopeful. Mm-hmm. They look good in preseason. This weekend, they played the New Orleans Saints. So we're going to give them some grace.
Mm-hmm. And the tailgating's amazing.
Yeah, that's how it is in Cleveland too. Thank goodness everybody's pretty schnockered by the time the game starts because
they're
a lot more forgiving and they'd rather fight with the other team than with each other.
That is terrific. Yeah. Well, Mandy, we are here to talk about you today. Like I said, you are all of the things, but I want to start with your book, mm-hmm. Sales Tales. I know that you come from the hotel side. You were, mm-hmm. Were you on property or tell us a little bit about.
Oh, yeah. I was, I started in hospitality in 1996 or seven. And I was an intern for a festival in Toledo, Ohio called Rally by the River. And I did band riders and jelly bean fulfilling and, you know, running the errands, whatever they needed me to do as a college intern. And then I was a marketing manager at a banquet and conference center. So it was kind of cool because I had 40,000 square feet of banquet and conference space, but we didn't have any hotel rooms. So we did a lot of partnerships with hotels, especially limited stay hotels. And that's when I became fascinated with hotels. And then I moved to San Diego, and that's when I started working for the hotels. So that was in 2000. And so, yeah, I mean, I had all the jobs at the hotels. I was a small meetings manager, a catering manager, a sales person. I handled the Smurf market. I handled the corporate market, the pharmaceutical market, financial, insurance, all the things. And I opened up, I left the hotel business for a little while to go to, it was a private real estate development company, but we owned bars and restaurants. So we opened up the very first mega club in San Diego. And, and it was cool. It was bottle service Vegas style club back in 2005. Okay. And it was really cool because it was three levels. We could hold 1,000 people. It was four blocks from the convention center. So I had a lot of the same clients,
yeah,
but I had this new cool product to offer them. And then when I worked for that company, we opened up three or four different venues all around San Diego. So that was cool. I got a real sense of the entrepreneurial spirit there. And I really got the sense of doing a competitive analysis and just what real estate developers, what they look for, what investors look for, how to pitch to investors. That was a really fun part of the job. And then I went back to hotels. I opened the Hard Rock San Diego, and then I moved to Las Vegas. I worked for Caesars Entertainment. And then after, you know, 15 years or so on the hotel side in 2010, I came over to the other side. And I became a client of the hotels with HPN Global. Yeah.
So you did all that, but you glossed over the part where you were like an award-winning salesperson. Okay. So you're an award-winning salesperson. You wrote this book, Sales Tales. So, I mean, you're a hotel sales expert. Okay. You teach people how to sell. And so what I'd like to know is, how did you win those awards? And then tell us about the book and how you came to write it.
Yeah. You know, the awards were always a surprise to me because I was either the youngest or the most underqualified in the field. I would get nominated and just happened to be nominated. And I think, you know, I got lucky. I think a lot of it is luck. I think a lot of it is hard work, but I've had so many great mentors over time. I've had some great bosses. I've had some bad bosses that helped me be a better salesperson by learning what not to be, by watching them. I've had some shitty products. Can we swear on this? I've had bad products and I've had good products.
Say that on this show. Well.
Yeah. So I think anytime I got an award, it wasn't ever anything I was gunning for. It was always a surprise. And it's just a result of some luck and some hard work and being surrounded by really rad people.
Wow. I love that. And I always tell people, until you've sold a bad product, you really haven't lived.
Yes. Well, and I think anybody can sell a beautiful product, right? But like,
that's right.
The test of true salespersonship is, if you could sell a hotel or anything that's been around for 30 years, it's got some cracks and some dents, it's in the airplane path, there's two towers and there's some cracked sidewalk in between, like that really tests your will, your sales will. Same with opening a new product. You're basically selling an idea. You're physically, like when I was at the club, we were physically selling a hole in the ground. We were selling an idea, and it was an idea that San Diego hadn't had yet. And I remember walking past that hole in the ground, and I had just left my hotel career, and my mom and dad were in town from Ohio, and they were like, "Are you sure you want to do this?" I'm like, I am. Like, I believe in it. They're like, "Are you sure you want to leave this really cush job?" And I believed in it the whole time I was there. But you're right. Like, you know, I got lucky when we opened up Hard Rock. We were selling the idea for a while, right? We were doing the pre-sales office with the picture this and the imagine
the renderings and all that.
The renderings, right. Yeah, just creating that experience. And that was fun too. But once it opened, I wouldn't say it was easy to sell. I would just say there were so many stories. And I think that's the other thing about selling is like, all of those products either inherently came with their own story, or by asking the bell person or the valet or the person that was there the longest, like the night auditor, they had so many stories, magical stories about those buildings that it makes selling easier because people love to hear stories. Yeah. And I'm really passionate about stories. So I was able to share the story of the physical building that helped customers get really attracted to it. So maybe it wasn't as pretty, but this particular ballroom is named this name because of this owner that was here way back when. You know, I think there's a storytelling element to some of those older buildings too that I was really attracted to.
Yeah. So absolutely. Tell us about the book and what was what was the motivation?
Oh gosh, I have been writing since I was a little girl. So, and I come from a family of writers. My grandpa was a writer. He would actually write poems all the time. And then my mom was a writer. She submitted, I remember being a little girl watching my mom submit her articles to Women's Day or Women's Journal magazine, Ladies Home Journal. That's what it was. Ladies Home Journal magazine. And I remember opening up the mail and seeing her get decline after decline after decline. And as a kid, I was heartbroken because I loved my mom's writing. I was mesmerized by my mom when she would read to me. And when I realized that I liked to write, in my back of my head, I was like, I am going to write a book someday. I'm going to publish a book. I am not going to get that decline letter. And I'm going to do this. And so I've always been writing. I've carried around journals with me forever. If anybody that's known me for a long time, I always have journals. Like I literally, like this is right next to I have a journal everywhere I go. And, I decided back in, 2016 or so that I was actually going to write the book. And who has time to write a book when you've got a full-time job and a marriage and family and all this stuff? Yeah. But I committed to carving out a couple hours a day. I ended up getting up an hour earlier than I normally would. I carved out 2 hours a day just to write. I hired a writing coach. I extracted all these really fun stories from all of my journals and the writing coach read some of it. And she's like, you're not a fiction writer. And I thought for sure I was a fiction writer. I thought, oh, I'll embellish all these characters. This will be fun. She's like, yeah, that's not you. Here's a homework assignment, Mandy. She's like, over the next 2 weeks, I want you to write about the first thing that comes to mind in the morning, 3 pages, double space. Just, it could be a grocery list. It can be about a dream you had, just anything. And so I did that and I turned that in. And she's like, here's an idea. When you write stuff about fiction, it's very unclear to me and it's very weird. When you write about business, I'm actually really interested. I think it's funny. I think it's a new way of looking at business. Would you consider writing a business book? And I was like, shit, like, no, like this is supposed to be my outlet. This is supposed to be fun. And I'm in business mode all day long. And she's like, give it a shot. So we put together, you know, the outline and the stories. And that's when I realized I had all these stories that technically are tales. And so my only condition on writing a business book was I'm like, it has to be funny.
Yeah.
It has to be very relatable. It has to be true. And it can't be stuffy because what we do in hospitality is a 24-hour operation and so many non-stuffy weird things happen. And I have read, and I'm a business book junkie, so I have read so many business books and I get a lot out of them, but there are so many times when I'm reading it, I'm like, you know, there's more to that story. Like there's more to that story than I'm saying, right? So my whole thing was like, I'm going to tell the whole story. I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to be funny. There's going to be swear words in it. And I'm going to interview people that I love in the industry or have been mentors and ask them to tell a story. So I've got stories in there that are peppered in from people that I've known over the years that I've been influenced by in sales. And then the book itself actually goes in the order of a traditional sale. So it starts with prospecting and networking, and then it goes into a proposal. It talks about making a pitch. We talk about time management, sealing the deal, closing the deal. And then the final chapter was a gift of COVID, and it's called disaster selling. And it was basically, how do you run your business during a crisis? Because when I looked back, I was like, you know, we've been here before. We've totally been here before. Like we were here in 2001. We were here in 2008 and 2009, and now we're here again. There's some common denominators. And so I just wanted the reader to understand, like, hey, we're in some really crappy parts right now, but you know, we've all been here before and we've all climbed out of this and we will climb out of this. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the story of the book. It came out October, 2021. And that girl, she lives on. She's had a life of her own.
Yeah.
Sometimes she goes silent for a couple months and then she revives. So it's been a really
cool. That is awesome.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Wow.
What would you say is the most important sales process? Or, you know, when you say building rapport or presenting the proposal or.
I think building relationships.
Overcoming objections.
Yeah, I think there is a finesse, an authentic, beautiful finesse to building relationships. And I think sometimes people, salespeople, entrepreneurs, I think people think that you're just building a relationship as a means to an end, right? I think people think, oh, I'm building this relationship to get this person to like me so they'll say yes to me. But the reality is you're building a relationship the whole time and you don't stop building a relationship once the deal is closed or once somebody says no to you. In fact, when somebody says no to you, that's an invitation to go deeper with the relationship. So I think a misconception is that we stop building when the deal is closed. But I think we're constantly building and we should be really always looking for opportunities to deepen and build the relationship.
Perfect. I absolutely agree with you.
No doesn't mean no. No means not right now.
Not right now. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, for
sure. I always say the selling doesn't start until somebody says no.
Or until they just say something.
Starts, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Until they say something. Yeah,
that is right. That is totally true. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So you are also a sales coach.
Yes.
You'll get hired out by, you know, by groups, by companies, by individuals. What are people looking for when they come to you?
Yeah, you know, that's changed. I have been doing sales coaching for 17 years now.
Wow.
And it's changed a lot over the years. I think in the early days, I'll take one-on-one coaching, for example. In the early days, people were looking, especially entrepreneurs were looking at, hey, I'm starting my business. How do I get new clients, right? That's not so much the case now. A lot of my one-on-one clients are experienced or they're transitioning from, let's say, that sales coordinator role to that sales manager role, or they're transitioning from a sales manager to a sales leader, or I have one client who I adore, who's the CFO of a company, and he just wants to have more sales acumen. He's like, I am awesome at the numbers. I am awesome at models. I want to be a better friend to the salespeople. I want to understand their process. So I think what the one-on-one coaching demands have changed a lot over the years, from more of an entrepreneurial need, I'm starting a business, to hey, I'm already in the business. I just want to be better at it or have a better understanding of it. And then the group coaching, you know, it's interesting right now, what it used to be, I used to spend a lot of time in the closet. Like I used to spend a lot of time teaching people how to prospect, cold call, send emails, get email responses, that kind of thing. But how it's transitioned over the years, like I just did a coaching session this morning. I did it for a hotel group in Minneapolis, a virtual coaching session. And, you know, there's 10 of them on the phone and what they wanted to talk about was fun with follow-up. And, you know, we're all getting this influx of RFPs and leads right now, but our conversion sucks, right? So like, how do we follow up? How do we stick out in the follow-up process? So right now there's a lot of conversation, not about finding business because business is, you know, very prevalent, but it's about how do we make that business more sticky? And then I do a lot of group sales coaching with hotel companies or people that sell to hospitality companies about social selling. How do we get more leads or engage more on LinkedIn or on Instagram or Facebook? How do we just use that medium in our business? And then the third thing, and this is something that was born out of pandemic, is people if you're doing business the same way today than you were in December 2019, you've got to make a change. And people are just starting to realize, like, okay, we've got more remote workers than ever before. Some people we've hired, we haven't met. And our business bedside manner really needs some tweaking. So I trademarked the term business bedside manner. There's a section about it in my book, but that's my keynote speech, is business bedside manner. And it's funny because it doesn't sound super sexy, but when you actually talk about it in a group, there's so many aha moments and these light bulbs, and people are like, guilty. I do need to work on that. So business bedside manner is a really hot topic in the group coaching as well. Yeah.
That's really interesting to hear you say that, just because like clients aren't necessarily in the office anymore. Mm-hmm. So if I'm calling you at home and your dogs are barking or your kids are running around, just pulling back, taking a moment, and, you know, then getting on with the process. So that's cool that there's a term for that and recognizing that that really is a thing.
Yeah. And it's like, who do you want to be? Like, part of business bedside manner, there's four key tenets of it. And one of it is practice empathy. Like, really be disciplined about being an empathetic business leader. And if you're not an empathetic business leader, you get mad when the dog barks. You know, it's like, my dog, I left my door open because my dog has a little separation anxiety. She may jump up and join me in this podcast at some point. So, yeah, but that's
okay.
One of the,
because this totally is real life.
Yes.
It's in real life.
Yes.
This is what we do, you know?
Yes, for sure.
So, I mean, come on. You're also a podcast host. So
yes.
Tell us about Adventures in Business. I mean, I get 24 hours a day. How many hours do you get a day?
I mean, I wake up at 5 a.m. I go to bed at 8:30. My days are full and I love them. And, you know, just people think I work 24 hours a day. Don't. I'm really good at taking breaks and putting things in buckets and focusing when I work. And I'm not perfect, you know, like I might be delayed in getting back to people in an email. And sometimes I'm super fast. You know, I think I'm more forgiving of myself now for not being perfect than ever before. And I think people get quality out of me. They may not get quantity, but they definitely get quality. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with telling people like, hey, you know, I can do this for you and I'll get it to you tomorrow afternoon, you know? And so sometimes that's not acceptable. That's okay. But most times, I mean, most of my clients I've worked with for so many years, they know I'm good for it. And I give them grace too, right? Because there's the two sides to it. Like they're not always the fastest. They don't always read all the emails that you put tons of time and effort in. Like they're, you know, so I give them grace. They give me grace. But yeah, I don't work 24 hours a day. That's not my MO. Yeah. But Adventures in Business, that's a hobby turned accidental business. Because Amani Roberts and I, my co-host, he and I, you know, we're really involved with MPI Southern California. And he used to be the president of the chapter at the time when we met. And we were talking about how to get people to register for our annual educational conference. And I had just been interviewed on a LinkedIn Live. Shout out to Jessica Martini. I don't know if you know her. She's used to be in our industry. She's now a financial advisor. She's awesome. But I was a guest on her LinkedIn Live. So I told everybody, we're on the call, like, why don't we just do a LinkedIn Live, like a 10-minute LinkedIn Live about who our breakout speakers are. Next week, we do one on who our keynote is. And the next week, we do one on the activities, just get people kind of amped up. They're like, great idea, Mandy. You should do it. It's like one of those, like you have the idea, so you have to execute it. And I had never, I've been a guest.
Yeah.
Sounds good. You do it. So like lessons learned. I won't do that again. But Amani had, he's a live streamer by trade and a DJ. So he knows how to do all that. So He and I started that for the conference. It helped boost registration. And then after that, we were like, how do we keep this going? And so we decided last July that we would start our own LinkedIn Live show. So it's every Monday, 1 o'clock, LinkedIn Live. And it's super fun. And we interview, and I think I've seen you on there before, like we interview different people, different thought leaders, CEOs, founders, really rad speakers. And we ask them a whole bunch of questions. And then it's been really fun because then that's been converted to, you know, it's on our YouTube channel and it's distributed in all the podcast channels. So we just celebrated a 1 year anniversary, but it's awesome. It's a great way to, network, as you know,
but
we learn a lot. I'm sure you do too. We learn so much from our guests, and that's my favorite part of it.
What's one thing that surprised you or that you've learned from doing the podcast?
Well, it's live.
Your aha.
It's my aha. And I think this even made me even more forgiving of myself and give myself more grace and other people. It's live.
Yeah.
So you're a live streaming. So anything can happen. Somebody's earbuds go out. I can't just hit stop because there's people watching you live in the chat. Yeah. And like the guest all of a sudden like loses connection. So then you've got to be ready. You've got to be ready to pirouette and talk about something else. Or, you know, Amani one time had construction going on and his people started to do construction in the middle, which he was like, we didn't organize it this way, but the show must go on. Yeah. So, I think just the live streaming component of it is, it's always exciting. You never know what's going to happen kind of thing.
It's just like the hotel business. You just never know what kind of day you're going to have.
You never know. What about you guys? I mean, you've over 100 episodes. Congratulations. What have you learned in your podcasting adventures?
We've learned. Where's the list? Because I'm not the most I can't even say it. I'm not savvy with technology, first of all.
But here I am
producing a podcast. So, you know, editing and distributing, that was like the biggest thing for me. Social media, I hate it. Okay. And so when we started this, Nikki was like, well, you know, social media is the new currency.
She's right.
So I'm like, is it though? Do I need? She's like, either you either have to do it or you're going to be left behind.
She's right. Nikki, you got it.
I'm like, so for me, that's what I learned. I learned how to do social media a little bit and I learned how to produce a podcast. And obviously we have fun, you know, it's been a passion project for us. So we enjoy it. We've been able to speak with so many great, you know, leaders and it's just been a lot of fun learning and, you know, doing what we do.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm so proud of you guys. I'm so happy for you. I'm proud of you. It's such a great thing to be doing.
And it's fun because I always say you don't realize how much stuff you actually know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we're talking about it or we're in a conversation with somebody and it's like, oh yeah, you know, and then it's like, yeah, I didn't realize I knew, you know, I remember when this happened or oh, yeah, I did learn that because of this situation. And, you know, in our industry, no 2 days are the same. So I feel like you're constantly learning.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's how to do something, how to say something, even how to say no.
Yes. Sometimes.
You know, yes. I'm like, I've been in this industry for a minute and knowing that, like, you can say no without it sounding like no, but and get your point across. So, you know, it's been really good. It's been an interesting ride that came out of us being our time of being available to the industry.
We were available to the industry when we started. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So it filled some time while we were looking for work. Oh my goodness.
For a job, that was a huge aha moment because as you know, as salespeople, usually your buddy from across town calls you and hey, why don't you come on over here and you go have lunch or something or coffee and then you got a job,
right?
Well, now you're filling out an application, doing a video, answering 5 questions and all this hoopty-doo. It's like, this is how you get a job.
The assessments.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah,
that's what we learned. We learned how to find a job. That's what we did, because we were doing it all wrong. We were sending out applications and what was it? The applicant tracking system was just kicking our stuff out every day. It was horrible.
Oh God. I'm so glad I didn't have to do that during that time. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm glad that you landed back to where you are, but my heart went out to so many of my sales peers who, and the ones that were at the hotel gainfully employed were cleaning out vomit from stairwells or checking people in or flushing toilets or I mean that, like, you know, so was it was just a time. Yeah, yep. It was a time that we I think we all learned a lot from. But think I'm glad you still have the podcast. Is a really good silver lining that came from it. That's great.
Yeah, my gosh. Absolutely.
I became a barista. My housekeeping time didn't last very long.
But I was housekeeping and engineering. Yeah.
Oh, it's good. I love a latte. That's good.
Oh my goodness. It was rough. So that brings us to your conference consulting. Mm-hmm. And I like what you say, that you get to choose who you work with. Mm-hmm. So talk about your business and what you do for your customer, for your clients, for your partners.
Yeah. I mean, HPN was a really natural transition for me, because HPN Global was one of my top clients when I was on the hotel side for many, many years. And so when they had called me year after year to ask me to come work with them, I just wasn't ready yet. And then they called Bill Kilberg, our CEO, called, and he had heard that I had fallen in love. My boyfriend was actually in San Diego and I was living in Vegas. And he's like, I heard you. I'll do it in the microphone like you did. I heard you fell in love. I'm like, I did. He's like, you're ready to come work for us now. You can go home and be with him. And that wasn't the reason I went to HPN. I was ready to make the change, but it worked out perfectly, because I did want to get back to San Diego. I had a home in San Diego. I had really bad tenants in San Diego that I had to keep going back to San Diego and check on everything. So it all sort of worked out. And, you know, it's very entrepreneurial. That's one of the things I love about HPN, is you can work as hard or as little as you want. Mm-hmm. Your market is the world. Yeah. You can interact with your customers however you want, and they support you on that. So, you know, my thing with customers is I want to be your very first call when the word meeting conference comes out of your mouth. I might not be able to help you with everything that you need, but I 100% have somebody that can. So, you know, for me, it's so much more than just finding a hotel, negotiating a contract, setting up site inspections, and then turning it back over to my client to plan. For me, it's truly, you know, what does my customer need? Sometimes the customer needs to be guided through the process, right? And so I'll provide that for them. Sometimes the customer really just wants to look good to their boss. I can provide that for them. Sometimes the C-level is like, I don't want to deal with this. I can help with that. You know, so it really just, for me, I like to find out what does the customer need and give them exactly what they need. And every day is different, right? So, you know, I really pride myself on being the hotel broker that's better than any real estate broker with a pocket listing, right? Like, I really educate myself on hotels, new hotels, renovated hotels, hotels that are changing brand flags. And I like to be able to share that with my customers. I want my clients to be like, I work with Mandy. She is so in the know that, like, I know things before most people know things. And so that's always my strategy, is just to be a real weapon, secret or known weapon, to my customers, just to help them do their job better, mm-hmm. faster, easier, just take some things off their plate. So that's my, you know, how I work with HPN. And then, you know, it's been 13 years. So I've been lucky to have some clients that I love, some clients that I don't love anymore, that I, you know, gracefully declined. Yeah. And then, you know, and I'm always taking new business, which is great. So I'm, you know, I'm always finding ways to take new business and welcome new people to the party. So it's a great gig. HPN is a great company, and I love my hotel partners and the hotel relationships.
What has changed with the hoteliers from when you were on that side to now?
Gosh, you know what? What has changed? The elephant in the room that I think nobody will talk about is they don't teach salespeople at hotels deeper levels of understanding contracts. And when I was on the hotel side, that was the thing. Like, if you knew how to read a contract forward and backward, you knew how to negotiate a contract, how to come to terms, you were the best salesperson on the team. And I feel now, I feel bad for my friends that are directors of sales and marketing. I don't think they have the time to teach younger salespeople the ins and outs of contracts. And that bums me out for a couple of reasons. I think it's a big disservice to those younger salespeople because that's a real competitive advantage for them in the marketplace to know a contract.
Yeah.
But it also bums me out as a client because I'm on that side and it is very frustrating to talk about an indemnification clause or talk about attrition cumulative versus night by night and what a resale clause is. It is a bummer when the person on the other end doesn't understand what you're saying in an email, in an edit, or on a phone call, and they have to go to their boss. It puts so much unnecessary pressure on my directors of sales friends. You know, like it's just, and so for me, like there's a bottleneck there. Like there's so many solutions there. Like I actually teach a class at San Diego State University in the hospitality program. I teach contract negotiation. Mm-hmm. And I think that class, I don't even know. I think it's like $249. It's something silly like that. It's like, if I were a director of sales and marketing, I would find my local college, whatever that is, because there's hospitality programs all around the world and they're all remote. Mm-hmm. Like I would find my local college and I would get in the budget to sign half my staff up to take an extra class. Maybe it's during the day, maybe it's at night, or I might give them a bonus if they do that, something like that, if they wanted more contract knowledge. Or, you know, I mean, I literally teach contract negotiation for my part of my sales coaching too, because I know there's a need for it now. I didn't used to do that, but I do that now because I'm the client on the other side that's suffering in silence with people that don't know how to negotiate a contract. But I think contract knowledge is the thing. And I don't think it's fair to anybody. Like I'm not even blaming anybody. I think it's just the result of hiring a whole bunch of new people and all those new people not knowing how to deal with the contract and not having time to help them deal with the contract. And then everything has to get passed through general counsel or, you know, director of sales, and they're in meetings with owners. Like it's just trickle effect that I think really we need to look at the sales organization as a whole, and we need to empower salespeople to understand what a contract means, have the authorization to make a decision, and trust that it will be okay and move on. So that's the biggest glaring thing I see now.
Yeah. What do you say, Nikki?
Well, I think it's true. I mean, you know, when you work some of these properties, especially these larger convention type properties, like when I walked out of there, like I felt like I had been to law school. Like I could take a contract apart, put it back together. And I mean, one of the things, even though in that time, it was like, you're not sending anything out unless you can explain every clause on here. And then also when you do have to take a contract to your director of sales, to me, it kind of diminishes your like authority or your power as a salesperson, because in my mind, I'm thinking, well, if you got to go ask them, why am I talking to you? You know, that's kind of how I feel. So it's like, you know, to be knowledgeable about what you're talking about, obviously, if they're asking you to do something that is just so way out there, you know, maybe you do, okay, let me get some backup on this because I don't want to get fired, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But something as simple as, you know, indemnification, you know, that's like, for some, that's a big scary word. And sometimes when you just define that to people, like, hey, you're going to go your way and I'm going to go my way. That's what this means. You know, it's it's a big word, but that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we're each taking responsibility for our own thing. Yeah. No, I agree. It's funny you say that, because I, as a younger salesperson, I loved taking that contract into my director of sales. I loved it because I like that was an opportunity for me to learn. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky to have a couple bosses that took the time to teach me, you know. I think now salespeople aren't even allowed. I don't think that it's that they won't. I think it's, I've heard from some hotel companies that if there are business terms that a client wants to change, it has to go straight through legal. They don't even empower salespeople. So if I was sitting, if I was a junior salesperson or director of sales, I don't have an incentive to teach that because it's just going to have to go to general counsel anyways. And, I deal with general counsel, like my clients, that's one of the first things I do. I ask them, do you have alignment with your general counsel and your CFO? And if they say no, then I say, I can't work with you, or I can work with you if you introduce me to them. Because like I am a general counsel's best friend. Like the last thing a corporate lawyer wants to do is look at a hotel contract. Trust me. Like they're trying to keep their CEOs out of depositions. They're trying to protect the risk of the company. The last thing they want to deal with is a hotel contract, right? So my performance measurement is like when my contract gets to a general counsel and they're like, no changes. I'm like A+, right? So I think that like we don't have to involve all the lawyers on the hotel side. Let's just educate, take some time to educate within and empower salespeople, and a lot more business to get done a lot faster.
Well, and sometimes it's just asking the client, okay, what are you afraid of? Mm-hmm. You know, why do you want to cross this out? Or have you ever been in a situation where this happened? Or, you know, it's like, I'm not running you down for 10 rooms. Like, let's figure out what's the fear factor here. And then let's talk about it. Cause sometimes it's nothing, you know, they just scary word, or sometimes it's like, well, we did this thing and this is what happened. Okay. Now, you know, now that I have some understanding. But yeah, there was a time when people would mark up contracts. I mean, they'd be bleeding. Just red line.
Yeah.
You crossed out my name. You
know? Yeah, maybe some of mine. But it might be some of my contracts.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. I have, let's see, I think we have rapid fire.
Ooh.
Button. And then we are going to let you go. I mean, we have covered everything on my list. What do you have, Nikki?
I mean, obviously I need to read the book. You know, I definitely need to read the book. And, you know, sometimes I feel like as a seasoned seller, there's still more to learn. You know, there's different spins, there's different training. You know, we need to be trained differently, and we're just in a different environment. So I you know, feel like I've through this conversation, I've learned a lot about you and what you offer.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, gone are the times. Remember back in our Marriott days, they used to send us for like the week long training when we'd go to, you know, Phoenix or Miami, and we'd wall out, and then we'd get like, the role playing and stuff like that during the week. But, you know, we don't have that anymore. So it's time for us to invest in ourselves. So I'm looking to do a one-on-one coaching. So I'm going to be looking at your schedule, Mandy.
Let's talk about it. I love it. I love working with senior people, though. That is one of my favorite things, because you do know everything. And there's this beauty that rests within you that you have forgotten about, that sometimes during that group or one-on-one, it gets like reinvigorated. So I love working with senior salespeople. Yeah. That's like one of my favorites.
I mean, I need to be re-energized. I need to be motivated. Yeah. And then there's just some things. I mean, yeah, I know that I need to follow up on the leads, or, you know, actually pick up the phone and call somebody and not do all the email. But you have all these great tips on how to, you know, get your email read and how to, you know, start the conversation and things like that. So I think, you know, those things are important, and we do need to change the way we're selling now, you know?
Ah,
That's right.
Yeah. So deeper relationships. Get that cell phone number. Yeah.
So, okay. Pancakes or waffles?
Ooh, pancakes.
Pancakes.
Beach or snow?
Shit. Beach?
That's not an option.
Beach. Beach.
Let's see. Pepsi or Coke?
Pepsi? I feel like I don't do any of these. Like, I don't eat gluten. I like mountains and I don't drink soda.
Okay.
But this is fun. Pepsi. Pepsi.
Okay. If you had to choose Pepsi, right?
If
okay.
I had to choose Pepsi. Yeah.
Where can we find you?
I am everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you can, I have a website, mandygraziano.com. I talk about all the things on the website. LinkedIn, I'm really active on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I love it when people comment. I actually set an hour a week to engage on LinkedIn. And I, you know, I love when people engage. Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and you can Google Mandy Graziano. My book's available everywhere you get your books. And audiobook too, if you don't like to read it, there's the audiobook as well. And it's, I narrated it. And there's some things in the audiobook that actually aren't in the physical book because the physical
little
book
Easter egg, have we?
Yeah, okay. It was finished. I finished writing it like 2 years before the audiobook came out. So there's a couple, updated stuff.
Nice.
Very nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mandy, is there anything that you want to mention that I may not have asked? What, anything else you want to share?
I mean, tune in on Mondays to Adventures in Business Live. Follow us on Adventures in Business Live on our LinkedIn channel. Follow us on our Instagram, Adventures in Business Live. And, you know, for the hospitality people that are listening, like, keep going. There's a long runway. There's a way to have fun with all of this. There's great customers out there. For every jerk, there's five great people out there. And just keep going, because we do work in one of the absolute best industries. But I know it's been really hard for a lot of us to find that joy, but it's in there. We just got to look for it. Keep our antennas up so we can feel that joy wave when it comes our way.
That's great advice.
Let's end it there.
Thank you for listening to Don't Look Under the Bed. We appreciate your support of the show. Please subscribe, share, and leave a review. Thank you.